This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by the all-new Natural Light Natterdays. With a refreshing strawberry lemonade twist, it's Natterdays.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team that's on the way back, a College World Series title. Come on, stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
You look like you're dressed for the weekend.
I do.
You're wearing a shirt with fruit on it.
My favorite fruit, actually.
Pineapple's your favorite fruit?
That's my favorite fruit.
You could do worse.
Yeah. I mean, pineapple's kind of one of those things. I mean, how many fruits can you mix with ham and it tastes really good?
Or a drink. Or a lot of pineapple. You're right. It's a very versatile fruit.
That's right. And I'm all about versatility.
So you look like you are dressed for the weekend already.
I do. I feel like, you know.
Or maybe you were having some weekend last night and you just rolled in here. Maybe that's it.
No, because what it was is that
I think we're on to him, folks.
What it was is the past few days with how nice the weather has been. I have been feeling it.
He's spinning the story.
I've been feeling like, hey, it's summertime, baby. So I'm going to wear my Hawaiian shirt with pineapples on it.
Yeah.
I could have worn my sombrero, but I decided
headphones won't
exactly.
Go over it.
I decided that there'd be no way I could make that work because, you know, I kind of need the headphones to hear what you have to say, Tommy, because I always want to hear what you have to say.
You don't want to miss it. I'm like E.F. Hutton over here.
That's right. That's right. So, yeah, I'm feeling a little, you know, I don't know if it's really in the holiday spirit or what spirit it is, but yes, I'm wearing.
That's the holiday spirit. I don't want to know what holiday it is.
It could be when Hawaii was named the 50th state of the United States. I don't know. You know, some sort of holiday that you could mix in with Hawaii there. So, but I'm glad you like it.
Have you ever been to Hawaii?
I have not.
I have not either.
So might as well wear the shirt to make it look like I've been. You know, it's kind of like where
you say you went.
Yeah. It's like when I wear boating shoes and a fishing shirt. You know, I don't go fishing, but I wear a fishing shirt. I don't really go boating that much, but I wear boating shoes. It's all part of the perception that you have.
It's all part of the lie, folks.
Exactly.
It's all part of the lie.
It's all a lie. That's all we ever do. That's all fashion ever is. It's all a lie to make people think that we've done things when we actually really don't do those things very often.
All the big rouge.
Yep. Pretty much. But today also, too, is going to be a full show today because not only do we have...
Mom's only going to do 2 hours.
Damn, huh? I know, you're going to have to stick around.
I've got to work three.
Yeah, you got to stick around for this one, Tommy.
Full show? Wait a minute.
Because not only does the Razorback baseball team start the game tonight, and we also, of course, have Richard Davenport on to talk a little recruiting with us and Tom Murphy to talk about the baseball series tonight, but we're going to be making some maneuvers around, and at 8 o'clock this morning... The new head hog of the Razorback basketball team, Eric Musselman, will be joining us on the show this morning.
So we're going to talk baseball, basketball, recruiting. What else we got in here today?
I could talk about it, but
3 hours.
I know you don't care, but the NBA conference finals have started.
Right.
So there's that. If you wanted to throw in some scores,
kind of throw that in the basketball.
Yeah, throw that in the basketball bucket.
Well, boy, we got a lot to talk about with Coach Musselman. We're glad to have him on for the first time. He got two new players. I'm sure that will come up in the conversation. So,
Connor Vanover and Isaiah Moss, by the way.
Probably more people know about Connor Vanover, I would think, just because he's from Arkansas, but than Moss. But.
Yeah. No, he's from Arkansas, but he's also 7'3", which, by the way, I need to find some stats or something like that. Is he going to be the tallest player in Razorback history? He'd have to be. Because I know that there's been some 7-footers. You had guys like Stephen Hill. Stephen Hill was 7 feet.
7 feet, yeah. I'll say Stephen Hill is one of the tallest we'd had. If there is one, it's not in like the last 25 years. You're right.
Yeah. So
none that I can think of. Oliver Miller was a big man, but he wasn't even 7 feet.
No, he's like 6'9", 6'10", something like that.
I thought he was like 6'11", but, you know.
He's big.
I'm going back close to 30 years now.
Yeah. But no one's been close to 7'3". Like, there's been 7-footers, but not 7'3". So, yeah, I think he's going to be the tallest player in Razorback history. So, but here's the thing, folks. He's not going to be eligible
this
year.
What an honor.
Yeah. I mean, hey, size is important in the game of basketball. I know that. At least it can really help you out more than it'll hurt you.
Can't coach it.
That's right. You can't just develop that. But, you know, he's not going to be available this year. He's not eligible for this year. He has to sit out a year, and then he'll have 3 years.
Can't we get one of these waivers? Can't you apply? Can't you plead your case?
Well, shoot.
Can't you fall on the mercy of the NCAA?
The NCAA is so inconsistent.
Yeah, exactly. You might as well ask. I mean, other players at other schools have gotten waivers for what we think are flimsy excuses. Let's come up with a flimsy excuse. Let's get him eligible.
Well, just say that somebody at Cal called him a mean name.
Yeah.
And you had to transfer because it was just affecting your psyche so long, and boom, there you go. NCAA should grant you the waiver. I don't know. Maybe he will. Maybe he'll try to go through an appeal process. Might as well. But
I think anytime you're going to transfer two time zones, you ought to be immediately eligible. New NCAA rule. So let it be written. So let it be done.
What about, I say at least two time zones is what you're saying. So three
right,
time
he's
zones
going from
for
the
sure.
West, you know, from the West Coast back to the Central. That's two time zones, right?
You know, there's probably some bylaw in the NCAA rule book that
subsection
that.
C, paragraph D, something, you know.
Mm-hmm. Time zones.
Article code 16-4.2F2, subset C.
Almost like you've
two time zones.
It's almost like you've read some something. Of those rules, with all those numbers and letters and subsets and all that stuff. So,
speaking of rules, basketball rule committee working through the process of new. Since we're having Coach Musselman on, new college basketball rules. It's going to be like two dozen or so rule changes likely to take effect. Still going through all the final approvals. But one of them that I think we're all going to notice because it's going to change the way the floor looks. Very likely the three-point lines moving will move back a little bit. Not to the NBA level, but just back a little bit to what would be considered the, or what is the international line, to the FIBA line. Now, you say, well, okay, big deal. You're probably right. But you've got a coach that, what's the big mantra, the hashtag right now? Pace and space and the way you like to align everything on the floor. And I just wonder from hit with his philosophy and with the way he likes to operate his offense, does that change anything at all? Does that matter? Is it not? It's just another foot or so. Big deal. Doesn't mean anything. If they widen the lane someday, which I think is, you know, another thing that they would love to get done, maybe it happens too, but that really, I think, affects a lot of folks and how they probably go about business. But, yeah, I think that's one thing that teams will have to adjust to this year in Division I basketball is a new three-point line. As a coach, does that change anything the way you do it?
Again, I don't know. That's why it'll be interesting to have Coach Musselman on to ask him those things. Because like,
well, while you're talking about rules, just share that little bit of knowledge with him.
Yeah, well, because that's the thing is that, you know, we're in sports, it seems like every single year, especially the ones that we cover the most, which is college football and even college basketball, it seems like there's always some sort of proposition or proposal or they're looking into something or examining something when it comes to rules. And was the one thing you've always talked about, Tommy, when it comes to basketball, they want more points.
More points
is always what it's about.
And that's the thing that's kind of in conflict or contrary to, you'd think moving the three-point line back would limit points. But this is something that I think, here's one thing that NCAA, for all the grief we give them, these are rule changes. You got some pretty smart folks that are on these rules committees. And the basketball rule committee has some sharp folks and a good diversity of people with different backgrounds on there. But one thing they do is they will play with some of these rules in the not important tournament and some of these exhibitions and things of that nature so they can get a feel and study the data. So they'll use it in the NIT. If you remember watching the NIT, they would reset fouls and then go to full quarters. I don't think men's basketball is headed towards quarters. That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Mainly because of TV.
It's always TV.
Well, it just doesn't fit. With the current commercial load and the current 16-12-8-4 media breaks, it doesn't work really as easily with quarters. But I could see the men's game at some point at like the 10-minute mark, you reset foul counts. Something like that could happen at some point. But, you know, those are the things people talk about a lot. But they study a lot of these things because if you've watched NIT games and Lord knows if you watched a bunch of them, bless you. They have tried some of these things in games where they can study what the effect on the game.
Yeah.
So they don't just do this stuff willy-nilly.
It's like a little
hoping it works.
It's like their old guinea pig that they use. It's just trying to see if that would work.
You're not going to try something out in the NCAA tournament.
You're not going to try out getting it in games that are meaningful, which is the regular season. So, yeah, I mean, no, it's the perfect opportunity for them to do it.
You know, some of these things you've seen already because they've studied them, you know, in either a preseason exhibition at times or in the NIT tournament.
Yeah. It's the perfect place to do it, too. And I think that as long as they keep looking to make the game better, more enjoyable, more entertaining, I'm all for it. But as far as a coach perspective, though, how do they like these rules changes and the ones that are being proposed? So there's a lot of things. It's like I said, it's perfect timing to get Eric Musselman on the show this morning with all the stuff going on with rule changes and with the new additions of his players. What is the roster going to look like? And I'm also going to ask him about Khalil Garland. I mean, my goodness, we still have not had a full update on him on whether or not he's going to play this year, if he'll ever play again.
Can he answer that?
I don't know.
HIPAA laws and all these privacy.
I don't even know what HIPAA law is. Like, what is that?
Well, that means you can't talk about someone else's medical stuff. To me, it's a big thing you can hide behind. But it basically means hospitals, doctors, people with your medical information are bound to protect that information, not let it out. Without your permission, I can't talk about your medical stuff. I can't tell everybody about that big wart right between your eyes that we hide here on the radio. It's a lot of makeup before the show.
Why do you think I have a hat on every day? It's just to hide it up.
Lots of makeup.
That's right. Well, I don't need him to go into details, but just say, is he going to play or not? Like, I just feel like that's the kind of the answer everyone's wanting to know.
Yeah.
Is he going to play or not?
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by the all-new Natural Light Natterdays, a light lager brewed with a phenomenal strawberry lemonade flavor that's perfect for bringing the fun to every occasion. The new Natural Light Natterdays.
Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
Arkansas basketball had two new additions to the team, all announced yesterday, actually. So it was a big day for Razorback basketball and Eric Musselman, where Isaiah Moss, who is a transfer from Iowa, who will be immediately eligible, I believe he shot 42% from three-point land last year for the Hawkeyes. So, hey, anytime that you can get over a 40% shooter from three-point land, it's always a good thing. So that's going to be a big time. But the real player that I think most people, at least in the state of Arkansas, were interested in was Connor Vanover, because Connor Vanover is originally from the state of Arkansas. He's 7'3". That's right, 7'3", will be the tallest player in Razorback basketball history, and he is transferring in as he played 1 year at Cal. He will have to sit out a year, of course, unless he throws an appeal out there, which could be possible, because for some reason it doesn't matter what ends up being when you transfer. You can have some sort of waiver given to you. I don't know how the process is going to work out there for Connor, but it's definitely fascinating to see that he is coming back to Arkansas. He will have 3 years eligibility after this year that he sits out, and I think that the thing that I wonder about, Tommy, because again, I've seen him play a few times, at least in high school, and I know you said you officiated a few games of his as well. Yeah. I was just kind of surprised. I'm like, all right, so I guess this is where they're wanting to go. This type of player is what they're wanting, because it's not like...
Is there ever a bad time to get a 7'3" guy?
If he can't play. I mean, but that's the thing, is like, can he play?
Well, can he rebound? Now, here's the thing. This is a 7'3" guy that likes to do what?
Shoot threes.
Shoot threes. And you're like, what? Huh? Shoot threes? Yeah. That's kind of the thing with him, is a big guy that likes to hit it from range. So, I don't know. It'd be interesting to ask Coach kind of what the long-term plan is. I'm sure he's going to give us the detailed scouting report. Oh, no, we're going to,
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But again, like you pointed out, he ain't going to play this year unless something happens. I guess you can go to the NCAA and say someone hurt your feelings somewhere, and then maybe they'll give you a waiver.
Seems to be the way they do it these days.
Again, I go back to what I said earlier. You move two time zones, you ought to get a waiver. You
ought to get a waiver just for that, as long as it's two time zones.
Yeah.
So kids, start your career on an East Coast or a West Coast and then switch over to the other coast.
I had to play basketball in the Pac-12. That ought to be enough right there.
You ain't lying. It's brutal out there.
Yeah.
But to give everybody an update of what he did at Cal.
I couldn't afford the state taxes in California.
Seriously.
I had to move.
And especially at Cal Berkeley. I couldn't
get my emissions sticker approved for $85 on my car to get my annual... inspection sticker for emissions.
So he had to transfer to Arkansas.
Yeah.
He played in 28 games last year. Started in 15. He averaged about 17 minutes per game. He shot about 47% from the field. shot 36% from three-point land, averaged 7 points per game, but only 3 rebounds per game. So 7'3", you want to see a guy get the rebounds, because here's the thing, it's all well and good if he can shoot threes, which obviously has a pretty good percentage, but Tommy, do you really want your 7'3" guy being outside the lane?
Does Arkansas need any help with rebounding, though? I mean, that's really not been a weakness. Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah, yeah, that's he might could help the rebound. You were just drunk there for a second, I think.
I was looking at your shirt.
Yeah, you're
right. I mean, that's what you want a 7'3" guy for, so maybe you win a rebounding battle. But again, I think sometimes we get carried away with the rebounding margin. They don't determine the winner on rebounds.
Right.
They determine the winner on points. Now,
well, yeah, but you limit the other team's opportunities.
I get it. You know, it'd be nice to get. To me, the rebounds matter like in the last 3 or 4 minutes when you need a rebound.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's not just that.
You can have a great rebounding team and, you know, still not make the tournament.
Well, it's not just that, but you don't want to have stat sheets and box scores getting handed out to you, or you seeing at the end of the game, and the other team had like 15 offensive rebounds.
That's the thing.
That's the frustrating thing.
Well, why did this team get 12 more shots on the basket than you did? Oh, look at all these second chance points. That's where the rebounding matters. But to me, rebounding, it's situational rebounding. There's a minute 10 to go in the game, and Arkansas is down 4. The other team has the ball, and they're bleeding the clock. And they take a shot with 7 to go on the shot clock, or 5 to go on the shot. You've got to get that rebound. You've got to get, because you've got to get another. You've got to get 2 possessions, unless they're dumb enough to foul you on a 3, and it goes in. You've got to get. You know, those are the things where rebounds individually matter more than others. So we get caught up in rebounding margin. I'm not saying it doesn't matter. I don't want to marginalize it, but they don't determine the winner on rebounding margin. Thank goodness.
Well, it only becomes a factor when you lose. You know, and like,
well, that's true. No one talks about that's a great point. No one talks about free throws or rebounding margin when you win.
Yeah.
Those are great points.
Yeah, because if you have a terrible free throw percentage, but you hit a lot of threes and still won the game, then everyone's all well good, fine, and wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it only,
that's not our coach's philosophy.
Right? Yeah, exactly. I mean,
it's something. You're exactly right.
There's always that thing. And it's the same thing even in football, where if you feel like a team's running too much or running the ball, not passing enough, it's like, okay, well, are they winning? Well, no. That's why you're upset. It's because they're losing those games, and you want something to change. Something needs to be mixed up. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
So, but no, I'm with you. That's the thing about rebounding. I'm not saying it's not an important thing. I'm not saying
it is.
Because it is.
But it's not everything.
Right. I think that, I mean, what would you rather have? A team that is really good at three-point shooting or a team that's really good at rebounding?
I want a team really good at scoring.
So three-point shooting.
Because the last time I checked, The official score, the person over there at the table with the striped shirt on that's not a referee and that keeps tally on everything, they determine the winner by points.
Mm-hmm.
The winner of the game is determined by who scored the most points.
Can you name the team that leads the NBA in rebounding this year?
No.
But you could probably name the one that leads it in scoring.
Probably Golden State, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's either Golden State.
Oh, that's a good guess.
But those are the teams that those are the teams that are winning. Those are the teams that are progressing. Right. And again, yeah. you just get caught up on it. And it's like, I don't know what's going to change. I don't know exactly what Eric Musselman's going to do, if he's just going to fix the rebounding issue overnight. But it's like you said, Tommy, you want the rebounds to happen when they matter the most.
Right.
That's when you want your rebound.
We need guys like Pelfer used to say that can score the basketball, you know. How do you feel about that phrase? Score the basketball.
I like it.
As in, what else are you going to do with the basketball? So
I dribble it, shoot it, pass it.
He needs to score the basketball.
Yeah. But, you know, that's the thing is with college basketball and the way it's going and the way that you see teams having success, not only in regular season but in postseason play, you know, there's different ways to skin a cat. There's different ways you can win. And just because you don't lead, because that's the thing is everyone wants your team to lead all statistics.
Yeah.
Like with Mike Anderson and his teams, you never led in rebounding, but you would always lead in assists, seemed like. You always caused a lot of turnovers. You shot the three ball pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you had all these other stats that were really good, and even the years where free throw shooting was really good, everything was fine. It was like, oh, the rebounding. Kept pointing to the rebounding. You're not going to be perfect in everything. Not every team is going to be number one in all the stats across the board. It's just impossible. It's never going to be that way. So it's just a matter of, as long as you are doing the things that you're strong at, that your strengths are, as long as you do those things really, really well, that's what's going to find you some success. And that's why it comes into play as far as pace and space, like Eric Musselman's wanting to play. What all does that entail, and what is that going to look like with this current roster this upcoming basketball season, especially when you're having a few auditions here and there. Like, what is this team going to look like and how are they going to do it? Because that's going to be the ultimate question.
In football, when you get a first year, like Chad Morris comes in, no one expects much year one. Well, basketball is a lot different, though, isn't it? You get a couple players, you get a 7'3 guy, even though he's not going to play, you get a few things, you get all these videos from practice going around, and now all of a sudden we're going to make the tournament again, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's how people's minds work.
Expectations in year one are a whole lot different in basketball than they are in football. Whole lot.
Yeah. And why is that?
Because one or two players can, a coach can go get the one or two players you need to turn the whole thing around. I mean, it takes 25 players a lot of times, unless you get a Cam Newton.
Right.
It takes 25 players to turn around a football program that's in bad shape. Two or three dudes can turn around a basketball program overnight.
Yeah.
If you can get them in there.
Well, you mentioned 25 players on football. You also have to have a few of those guys within the program a few years. So yeah. I mean, you just do tree freshmen. Yeah.
I'm just saying the contrast in expectations, because I think our expectations for Musselman's program in year one are a lot steeper than what we would say Chad Morris going into his first season a year ago.
But don't you also feel like part of that is just because you know that there is talent and potential on this team that you saw from last year, young, raw talent?
Well, the launching pad for Musselman's much more elevated than what Chad Morris took over.
Without a doubt.
Close. The basketball program and the situation he inherited there is much better than what Bielema left behind for Chad Morris. So you got all these things to factor in. But, I mean, I'm not just talking exclusively about Arkansas. It's rare that you see a coaching change in college basketball where fans don't have immediate expectations for great change.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, the hallmark for many programs, not all, is making the tournament. Well, you know, can you be amongst the 32 or 30, whatever it is, 30-some-odd best at-large teams in the country? And then there's, you know, 30 or 32, whatever, automatic bids.
Mm-hmm.
Can you be amongst those teams? You know, it's just easier to get that stamp of approval. Mm-hmm. You made the tournament, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's like, would you be shocked if Arkansas made
it? And it is in football.
Would you be shocked if Arkansas made the NCAA tournament this year in basketball?
No. I mean, I don't think I'd be shocked.
I wouldn't either.
Yeah, because just as we've talked about yesterday, just making a bowl game in football doesn't really do much. I mean, it's about win total in football. You know, in basketball, it's about making tournament. And then eventually about doing well in the tournament, obviously.
Mm.
That's why Mike's not here anymore. He couldn't get to the Sweet 16. In football, you keep going to like the Birmingham Bowl or Memphis or, you know, Music City Bowl. You keep going to that level of bowl game for about 5 years in a row. You'll have some restless football. But he's been to 5 straight bowl games.
Doesn't matter.
You know, he's averaging 6.5 wins.
Mm-hmm.
You know. If that's the way it goes with Chad Morris, that'll be the discussion on this show in a few years. So, I mean, it's just a difference. But you get to the tournament five. You had a coach get to the tournament 5 years in a row and get to a Sweet 16 here. But I think just getting to the tournament 5 years in a row would be satisfying to many Arkansas basketball fans.
Without a doubt. It's just
a difference in the sports.
That's right.
There's just a big difference in expectations on the sports.
Yeah, that's the key term is expectations because people know what Arkansas basketball is capable of.
I just find it interesting the things we were talking about, discussing, and expecting out of Chad Morris's program at about this time when he came in over a year ago versus, you know, we're 6 minutes into the Musselman era.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, well, you know, we got a 7'3 guy on the way. We got this guy coming. Recruiting's going well. All these neat videos that are coming out from practice. Yeah, they make the tournament.
Yep. Hey, and the biggest part about it is what they got left behind. Was what was left behind for them. Mike Anderson, without a doubt, left his program in much, much, much better shape than what Brett Bielema left his football program in.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by the all-new Natural Light Natterdays, the new beer of the summer with a refreshing strawberry lemonade twist. Natterdays, fun for every occasion.
They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house.
In case you're just joining us, here in about an hour, we're going to have the head coach of the Razorback basketball team, Eric Musselman, joining us, I guess, in his Morning Rush debut. It'll be the first interview that we've actually been able to have him on And it'll be interesting to see, not only with the big news coming out about his players that he's that's been added, but also we want to get into some rule changes and things like that. But, you know, it's funny because the question, he's done some national interviews with guys like John Rothstein and Jeff Goodman and all that. And the question was always brought up of his coaching staff. And when is it going to be completed? Who are you looking at? How close are you to that? And he says, hey, I'm just being patient with it. I will admit, though, Tommy, that it is a little peculiar that he's been here for as long as he has been here.
Mm-hmm.
And he hasn't had his full coaching staff put into place just yet. College basketball's over.
Well,
I mean, it just makes you wonder, what's he waiting on? What's he being patient for?
I think these live periods, the focus has really been on recruiting. A, getting to know the players he's got on the roster now.
Right.
So, B, he can go out and recruit during these limited live periods. The NCAA has worked the schedule around. We'll have Richard Davenport in the show, and we've talked to him about that before. We could maybe lean on that conversation a little bit more again this morning and put a little more context on it, because when the NCAA is giving you tighter windows of when you can be out seen and evaluating and you're new, you got to get to know your roster, then you got to be out doing that. And he's made mention, it was on Ruskin and Zach's show, that, hey, we don't want to get in a big hurry to name our staff. This isn't something we want to rush into. And he also knows, and I haven't heard him say this, but he's got 30 years of NBA background, right? You know, he's been around that game. He knows that, you know, this is the time of the year that coaches start getting released. There's, you know, changes in general managers. There might be some guys that he's got connections with in the NBA that, you know, he might want to be looking at. So, be interesting to see, you know, kind of exactly what his timetable is on that and what former Razorback connections, if any, he wants to bring in. And then I'm sure a lot of it's off his coaching tree and NBA connections and people that fit the recruiting grounds here. Because when you go from a place like Nevada to here, the areas you're recruiting are just vastly different. You got to have guys that have strengths in the geographic areas recruiting the areas that are going to work for Arkansas. So just moving your staff with you is not always going to work.
Well, and it's one of those things, too, that as an assistant coach, it's a little different, or at least it's perceived a little differently than what it is, say, under Mike Anderson, where, you know, we had Nick Mason here a few weeks ago once there was announced that Eric Musselman was the new coach, and we were talking about assistant coaches. He was like, hey, you better get somebody that can recruit.
No.
He's like, that's what all these great teams and all these great programs have. Their assistant coaches are not just opening up the gym to go and make sure that the guys are getting their shots up. Like, they are pivotal in getting players to their school. In fact, even in some cases, more pivotal than the head coach themselves.
I agree. And so ultimately, why is Mike not here any longer?
Couldn't recruit.
Didn't get enough good players in. Not that he didn't get any, he just didn't get enough of them.
Yeah.
And, you know, Mike would still be here, in my estimate, if a couple of the key in-state guys. We've talked many, many days about Malik Monk and Kayvon Allen and the change in perception of Mike as a head coach and probably the success of this program and getting that Sweet 16 monkey off the back of the program and the drought since 96. We probably wouldn't be talking to Coach Musselman today if some of those things had happened. If a few more elite players had come to Arkansas along the way at the right time. So it's all about recruiting. What's the approach Chad Morris has taken in football?
Recruiting.
It's all about recruiting. And at a place like Arkansas, where you do have, I think, more in-state talent for basketball than maybe any sport we've got in this state, as far as players that can play at this level.
Mm-hmm.
And impact teams. There's players in this state. Now, it comes in cycles, and it's not every year, but there are, I mean, we just named two a minute ago that had real impacts in the SEC. Now, Monks obviously was 1 year, but pretty heavy impact. Kayvon Allen had a pretty good impact on the SEC for, what, 4 years?
Mm-hmm.
So, down in Florida. So, there are players out of the state. There's been Archie Goodwin. We could keep going down the list.
Yeah.
The more of me in Arkansas, got a couple with Bobby Portis and Daniel Gafford. But you got to get more of those guys. Yeah.
Well, that was the one thing I was going to say is that if you, and I think we've talked about it, that if you just put together and say if that no player or no really quality player out of the state of Arkansas ever left Arkansas and went to the university, played for the Razorbacks.
Right.
I mean, they would have made the tournament pretty much every year.
Mm-hmm.
and maybe even made a Final Four or two.
Listen, you're not going to get all of them. You just got to get most of them.
No, and you got to get
the highest profile.
That's what I was about to say. You got to get the ones that are program changing type of players.
Like Monk was that kind of guy.
Yes, and because they
even
don't
know it was 1 year.
That's right. Because just imagine what they would have had with if they just had Monk for that 1 year. Because that was the year that they had Moses Kingsley and Dusty Hannes and Daryl Macon and Jalen Barford. Like that team that went to the tournament and honestly was the closest to advancing to the Sweet 16. They had a 5-point lead on North Carolina. Imagine if Monk was on that team. The difference it would have been.
And this kid we were talking about out of, was it Magnolia? Damian Ford?
Darian Ford.
I knew I wasn't going to get his first name right. He's just a freshman now going into his sophomore year. Arkansas's already, created and started that relationship there. Everybody in the world's going to want this guy. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting because we had Richard on last week. We asked him about him. He thinks he's in that same caliber because, to me, you got Corliss and Monk. Got Corliss Williamson, Malik Monk, and then there's really nobody else that's in that elite category in my lifetime. Now, you could go back and maybe put a Ron Brewer or Ron Brewer Sr.
Joe Johnson was pretty close, but
not in high school. Not, no.
You don't think Joe Johnson was close?
No.
Okay. Well, he's a 5-star, so.
I understand, but I'm talking about guys that when they're in the 8th and 9th grade, they'd line up hours before the game to get in to see this kid play junior high basketball kind of player. Monk and Corliss had that kind of draw, that kind of ability. I remember my dad getting me out of school early one day to watch Corliss play in a junior high basketball tournament, and the gym at 3:30 in the afternoon was packed. 2,000 people in the gym to watch a junior high kid play. Night in, night out. You watched a lot of Bentonville games when Monk played. You couldn't get in to any gym he was playing in.
Couldn't get a ticket.
Those kind of – why? Because talent obviously showed up. I mean, obviously, office. Joe Johnson's probably made more money than any Razorback that played basketball at the University of Arkansas. I mean, made a ton of money. But I just think from a high school standpoint coming out – Corliss and Monk are in one group, and then Joe probably leads the next group.
Yeah.
But question is, this Ford kid, is he going to be, he's just going to be a sophomore now. We don't know yet. Is he going to be that kind of talent that could come along that quickly after Monk? That's the kind of kid you talk about, program-changing players. Mm-hmm. There's one potentially in our state.
Yeah.
And then you got to ask the thing that comes to my mind, well, what if the NBA changes their draft requirements where you just only have to be 18 now. Some of these great players may not even play college basketball. So you hope they change it right after you get a kid like
that. That's right.
Not gonna be many of those come through our state. But those are the kids you got to have a coach that can land.
Yeah. And, it's not only just the players that you brought up, they were program changing too, but it's like box office. It's like must see wherever the hype machine gets revved up. And gets people not only excited to see what that player can do, but excited to see what he'll do at that next level.
See, Joe Johnson he wasn't really a program-changing player at Arkansas. He played a year and a semester.
Yeah.
Played three semesters.
He had some academic issue, I think, in his first some years.
They only played a season and a half, if you will. Yeah, he didn't get to play till January or whatever.
He didn't want to play college ball.
So, obviously a great player. Made $100 million or whatever spent in the NBA, probably close to that by now in his career.
Yeah, but it's funny, okay? So you say that about basketball, and this just reiterates our point. You say that about basketball, and you mentioned those players, and I agree with you all the time. How many of those players have happened in football from the state of Arkansas?
Sean Andrews would come to the top of my mind, and he's an offensive lineman.
I mean, Darren McFadden.
Darren McFadden is another one. I mean, but McFadden... Sean Andrews, if everything had been ideal for him, because linemen can have such a long career. I mean, McFadden, Sean Andrews.
And as far as the hype machine goes, though?
Matt Jones could have been in that category.
Right.
If everything would have been maybe a little bit different.
As far as the hype machine goes, though, Mitch Mustaine, when everyone was wanting to see what he was. Now, he didn't pan out.
He was the most coveted football player ever out of our state, maybe.
Because he was number one overall in at the quarterback
all
position.
All-American quarterback.
I mean, the hype machine and what everyone wanted to go and watch that team play.
Oh, I mean.
It was there for sure.
When he announced, all the local news channels covered it as a news event live because it was like at 5 o'clock. They did it on the news. It's a live. I mean, it was that big a deal.
Yeah. I mean, he was.
Do you ever remember a player's announcement on where they're committing? Not, I mean, yes, maybe leading the sports segment of the 5, 6, or 10 o'clock news, but not where they're going to cover it as, like, to lead the 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock news. That's what happened with him.
Yeah, doesn't happen very
often.
But
Springdale 5 was a whole different deal. But, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's... There's been a few, but there's a lot more in basketball than there is in football, mm-hmm. and you need a lot less basketball players to be really successful than you do football players at the university. So, point's been made. You can do it at Arkansas, and we'll see if Eric Musselman is going to be able to do it.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by the all-new Natural Light Natterdays, the new beer of the summer.
New head coach of the Arkansas Razorback basketball team. Appreciate you joining us this morning, Coach. How you doing?
It's great to come on with you, John and Tommy. Appreciate you having me.
Of course. I know that it's been probably a big whirlwind since you have arrived in Fayetteville to be the next head hog. Have you finally settled in? Is everything kind of calming down a little bit for you, or is it still really going into this transition phase from you from Nevada?
Yeah, we're still in the transition phase. We've been so busy with recruiting that look forward to spending today doing some media stuff, but then also diving into our assistant coaching spots. We tonight, or actually last night, started a dead period at midnight. So it allows us now to get back to focusing on staff as well.
That's got to be a challenge. As, you know, you're trying to get a program headed in the direction you want. You've got family that's trying to get settled in. They're in two places. You only get 24 hours in a day just because you're the head coach. They don't give you more. Talk about the challenges. Tell us the time constraints of trying to do both and then trying to get your family physically moved from another state and two time zones away to Arkansas. That's got to be a headache in and of itself just right there.
It is. Well, the good thing is, you know, when you first take over a job, like, for instance, with me, my family is still out in northern Nevada. My daughter's finishing school, and I got a superstar wife and a superstar daughter, and both of them are handling the move great. My wife has basically done everything because I've only been home one time or back to northern Nevada one time to help her. And so she'll have the house packed up and sold, and they'll be on their way here very soon. But it's good because what it does is it allows myself and the staff members that are here to spend a lot of hours recruiting, a lot of hours focusing on our current players and trying to evaluate them. And you kind of need that two-month time frame where you're solely focused on the job. And then once you get your feet under you and have evaluated everything and have a staff in place, by that time my family will be here.
Well, Coach, you mentioned recruiting. It was a pretty big day for you and your basketball program yesterday, and I'm just going to be honest. I don't know as far as NCAA rules go if you're allowed to say anything or talk about it or anything like that, but Connor Vanover and Isaiah Moss, both transfers that are committed to play for the University of Arkansas to play for your team. Just what did you make of that day, and if you're able to talk about those guys, what kind of game and what kind of thing can people expect from them once they arrive at Arkansas?
Yeah, I really can't talk about any particular player until all the paperwork's filled out, but due to compliance stuff. But we're really excited about the way recruiting has gone, and you know, we want to try to play a certain style, so guys that can make 3-point shots become at a high premium for us, and it's hard to build a team at this time of year, but we feel like in the time frame that we've been here, we've had some incredible visits. Even some guys that have been here and maybe haven't committed, those guys have loved what they've seen. And so, you know, there's so much to sell here. And that's one of the things that really, really excites us is you know, we're gonna try to go head-to-head with the best, you know, programs in the country and not shy away from that from a recruiting standpoint. And certainly yesterday was a really great day for us.
You mentioned your staff and trying to complete putting the staff together. What has been your philosophy? I know the NCAA live periods have kind of changed some timing of what coaches are doing here in the spring. What has been your philosophy as you're trying to put this staff together at the SEC level? You know, how are you approaching that this time in identifying the people you need to complete your staff?
I think the first thing we wanted to do is I did not want to be conducting a bunch of interviews from the time that I got the job until today, because we wanted to recruit. And I did not want to lose players at the expense of putting the staff together. So now in college basketball, this is really a time starting the day where a lot of college coaches are going on vacation. So it's a guys aren't on campus, meaning your own players. Recruiting is dead as of last night at midnight. So now it allows myself and the other guys that are already here to start conducting interviews and to start putting the staff together. And we would like to try to get a Power Five assistant coach who's a proven recruiter to go along with a former Division One head coach and a former Power Five assistant and a former NBA player in Corey Williams. And then with that third spot, you know, the philosophical, and it's interesting because I had conversations with several of our players last night and kind of wanted our players to identify what type of play, coach or what type of profile they would like to see in a coach. And I kind of gave some profiles of some college coaches. And I also threw out there some NBA coaches that I've worked with that also might have interest. So I think that, you know, for us, it's going to be trying to find the right fit, being patient, having an open mind to a lot of different scenarios, looking at maybe some really successful you know, Division II coaches. But I do think that the profile of a coach who's been at a Power Five and then maybe looking at an outside-the-box type hire makes the most sense for us.
We're speaking with Eric Musselman, the head coach of the Razorback basketball team right now on the Morning Rush. Coach, you mentioned recruiting, and we know that it's on a recruiting Thursday. We've been talking about recruiting. It's obviously a pivotal part, if not the biggest part, of college basketball and how it is to be successful. Just for you and the way that college basketball is today, especially in recruiting, what would you say are some of the biggest challenges to go through the recruiting process and to make sure that you get the guys that not only will come to your team and help out, but help you win in a big way? What are some of the biggest challenges?
Well, I think there's a lot of challenges. Number one, you've got to identify somebody that has talent. Number two, you've got to identify somebody that fits into your culture. And then you've got to try to project how much upside a player has and how much of an impact you can have on that particular player from a player development standpoint. And so you've got to be able to try at least to predict the future as best you can. And then you always want guys that are team-oriented and guys that are winners and love being in the gym and are gym rats. So all those things really in no particular order. And then there's a whole nother facet when it comes to, all right, now when you get a player, a prospective student athlete on campus, how does he fit with everybody? His inner circle or his mom or his dad or who he comes with on a visit, how is that external family going to fit into your internal Razorback family? All those things become really, really important when you try to decide, you know, who is going to be a part of your program.
Eric Musselman with us here on the Morning Rush, head basketball coach of the University of Arkansas. Pace and space, that was a hashtag or a phrase people latched onto quickly from the time you arrived at Arkansas. When you hear pace and space and Eric Musselman, what do people need to think? What do you want them to understand about your offensive philosophies, your basketball philosophies?
Well, you know, it did take 4 years at Nevada to get exactly where we wanted to be, and what it was you know, and this is what we hope to get to, is a lot of guys between 6'5" and 6'8" who are athletic, who can play multiple positions. Guys that can shoot the three, a team that's cosmetically pleasing, a team that the home crowd can get behind and have fun and be energized. And, you know, I think right now with the makeup of our team, because we started talking about it last night as a staff, the makeup of our team is we're going to be able to play, we feel right now, with 4 to 5 shooters on the floor during certain stretches of a game, sometimes maybe 3 shooters at a minimum. So I think we're going in the direction that we really have from a vision standpoint. And along those same lines is you got to be really solid defensively, and you got to have toughness, and you've got to put a high premium on getting loose balls. Right now, we understand that we lack size up front. And so we're going to have to make up for it by fronting the post and not allowing easy post catches and really, really rebounding 1 through 5 and not just relying on our upfront players at the 4 and 5 spots to rebound the basketball.
Coach, this is a rule change year for college basketball, and there's going to be, I'm told, 24, maybe 25 rule changes this year for college basketball. But one of the most noticeable things that is very likely when all of the voting and the approvals happen and the rules committee gets their final stamp on it is the three-point line is likely moving back to the FIBA or the international line. How does that affect the game, in your opinion, and how does it affect the way you want to do things at Arkansas, or does it have any bearing?
No, it definitely has bearing because I think that when you look at rookies in the NBA, when they go into their first year, their percentages oftentimes dip. And the reason that they dip is because they're not used to that line. And when you move back just a little bit, it can severely affect not only your percentage, but actually the form that you have on your shooting. And what's really good is I think it helps great shooters, and I think it's really going to hurt guys that are trying to develop a three-point shot or are limited shooters. I think it's going to drastically affect them. But I do think that the more our game worldwide can have the same type of rules. I love what college basketball on the women's side has done where they have four quarters because that's what happens in the NBA. And I think the more that FIBA, meaning international basketball, college basketball, and NBA, the more that they can have unified rules, I think it makes it much, much easier for a college basketball fan or an NBA fan or a fan of European basketball. Right now, it can become confusing. You go to a men's game, and there's a first half and a second half. You go to a women's college game, and there's four quarters. You turn on an NBA game, and there's four quarters. And so I think the more unified we can get, and I think the more unified like the three-point line, I think that helps players as well.
What is one rule change you think would be important to the game? Or if you could make one adjustment or change, what would it be in your opinion?
Well, I think having coached overseas in Olympic competition with national teams, I love the live ball on the rim. I think it creates excitement. It's one of the most, even a free throw, when you're able to knock that ball off the rim when it hits, it's really, really fun. And the fans get into it, and you're at the edge of your seat during free throws rather than reaching into your popcorn bag when a guy is shooting a foul shot. So I love that rule. When I was in the NBA G League, the minor league for the NBA, we experimented it, and our players loved it. And it didn't affect a lot of games, but when it did, it added excitement to the game.
You're saying make basket interference legal. That's what you're really saying.
When it hits the rim, just like they have in Olympic competition.
Yeah, that would certainly be a great one. That's for sure. Make it a lot more entertaining. Real quick, Coach, before we let you get out of here, I got to ask this on behalf of the fans. Many fans like Midnight Madness. They want Midnight Madness back to Bud Walton Arena. It's something that got everyone hyped up for the basketball season. Is there something like that in store? Can we bring Midnight Madness back, something to get the season kicked off the right way? Do you have anything planned, or is that further down the road and you haven't even thought about that yet?
I haven't thought about it, but I will tell you that at Nevada, we were all for what the fans like. I think that you've got to promote your program. You've got to do things that your fan base wants to see. And if that's something that makes sense for us as a program and for us administratively, and that's something that our fans and boosters and former players and alumni, if that's important, then we certainly want to entertainment and look at it. And look, there's no doubt that when you do fun things, your players love it, and it's also great for recruiting.
Well, if you ever need a hype man for Midnight Madness, you know where to find me, Coach. That's all I'm saying. I love me some Midnight Madness.
Trying to get him a job already.
Yeah. Love me some Midnight Madness. Coach Eric Musselman, head coach of the Arkansas Razorback basketball team. Appreciate you joining us, Coach. Good luck the rest of the summertime, and I'm sure we'll be catching up with you later down the road.
John, Tommy, thanks for having me on. Love, come on the Morning Rush again sometime soon. Thanks, guys.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Like the Bud Light Morning Rush podcast? Check out the Halftime Pod at hitthatline.com.